Hey there. Today I'm going to be sharing with you my appearance on the Thriving in the Midst of Chaos podcast with Jessica Temple. When Jessica isn't interviewing a guest, she and her husband Lewis tell down-to-earth stories about what life is like raising two children with special needs. So let's get started.
This is Jessica.
And this is Lewis.
We have a preschooler and a toddler. Our children are a different kind of perfect. This is a show about thriving in parenthood throughout raising children with special needs while keeping ourselves and our sanity intact. This is Thriving in the Midst of Chaos. Hello, everyone. This is your host, Jessica. Before we get into our episode, I have a little story that I'd like to tell. It's called Jessica and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. I went to work with my glasses on, and then they fell off of my face. I had to tape them up and stick them back on my face and wear them all day like that because it was Monday at 7:30 a.m. I went to the doctor's office after work, and they said I needed new frames because Benji had finally broken them. And I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. I could tell because when I took Alex for his 18-month checkup, they said he had bronchitis. They said he had an ear infection and asthma, too. Come back on Thursday, the doctor said, and we will give him his vaccines. Thursday, I said, I'll be in Costa Rica. It was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. That's what it was, because I got my MRI results and it said I had three new back problems. It was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. But my husband says some days are like that, even in Costa Rica. All right, back to our episode. Today we discuss therapy, self-care, and building a village. We have a special guest today. Amy Nielsen is the mother of four children. Her youngest has ADHD and autism spectrum disorder. She knows firsthand how isolating parenting a child with special needs can be. It was at one of her lowest points as a mother of a special needs child when she realized she, her son, and her entire family desperately needed a support system. So she got to work and made it happen. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica. I just have to say, your no terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day story, I can so relate to. I'm surprised my eyeglass frames are not broken yet. So kudos. That was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's funny because I go to get my glasses adjusted like every week or so because I keep getting bopped in the face or headbutted or hit or whatever.
Oh my God. And so do I. I swear I'm in there constantly.
So I'd ask them, I'd said, you know, I'm really nervous about getting my glasses adjusted because one day I'm worried they're going to break, even though they're only a year old. And the guy looked at him. He's like, no, these are actually in really good shape. You shouldn't need another pair for years. And then I go in Monday and yeah, no, the screws are stripped and nothing will fix it. And it will just keep falling off till I get a new pair. So a bunch of dollars later, we need a new pair. So it's just going to happen again in less than a year.
Exactly. So,
and I had purchased the protection plan on the glasses and it had just ended. Of course it did.
I can still relate.
Yeah, I just had to tell that story because that was just one day and those were just three things that happened that day. There was right. more, but that was enough for a story.
Exactly.
Oh, goodness. So Amy, tell us a little bit more about your family.
Sure. We call Orlando, Florida home. So we are big Disney fans. We are there all the time. And my youngest son is a giant Star Wars fan. So the Star Wars land at Hollywood Studios, we have been loving. My husband is originally from Vancouver, Canada. And we met when he relocated down here for work. And when we met, I already had three children. My oldest daughter, Danielle, I had when I was only 17 years old. She is now 31, and it turned out great. She is an elder law attorney in the Tampa Bay area. Then my youngest daughter, I had in my 20s. She is the creative spirit of the family, so she's still trying to figure out what she's going to be when she grows up. And my oldest son, I had in my 30s. He is now in college for business. And when Brent and I met, he wanted to be a dad. He had waited his entire life to find the right person to marry, and he wanted to be a father. And he asked me if I would have one more child. And I think I looked at him like he had three heads. I'm like, I have three kids already. The oldest is in law school. What are you talking about?
Right.
And currently I was a teacher at the time, and I've been teaching for around 17 years. And he said, if you have a child, you can stay home as long as you'd like. And even though I loved my job, I was really missing the fact that I never got to be home with my kids when they were babies and just be present for all of those milestones. And I really wanted to make him a father. So I agreed to have one more child. And so Barkley was born in my 40s. So my husband jokingly refers to me as the Gordie Howe of childbirth. So if anyone out there is not a hockey fan, Gordie Howe was a hockey player who played hockey across 5 decades. Now, I've only given birth across 4. So I tell people that the only babies I hope to hold in my 50s are my future grandchildren.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, it's quite funny because my oldest daughter doesn't have any kids yet. And when I was pregnant with Barkley, I mean, she was just like disgusted by the whole thing. Like, I am 27 years old, mother, and you are pregnant. And I remember having a dream that I was in the hospital and just given birth to Barkley, and she walks in and I said, look, Danielle, I have my own grandchild. And honestly, it's kind of been like that because I appreciate how fast this time flies because I've already raised 3 kids. And I honestly enjoy and appreciate every single moment with just this passion that I think I overlooked before as a working mother, you know, with a chaotic job and family. And, you know, you're just in the thick of all of it. And now I just really get a chance to enjoy that with him.
That's wonderful. I feel like that's the dream. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the purpose of having children is to be able to enjoy them. And it's unfortunately in this society not always possible.
Correct.
How busy we are. So that's wonderful. So tell us a little bit about what you do and about your journey to where you are now.
Sure. Well, currently I am a stay-at-home mother with my little guy, Barkley, and the other 3 kids are grown in college. And like I said, one's a lawyer, and I run a blog and a podcast called bigabilities.com. And I want to be a resource for families like my own that are impacted with a child with autism. And I think I have kind of a unique perspective on that front because I already had raised 3 other kids. Mm-hmm. I already had taught hundreds of children as an educator.
Right.
And so I look sometimes at young moms that maybe this is their first child and they just feel overwhelmed. And I just want to try to help them come to peace with their child's diagnosis and to get into a place where they can focus on their child's strengths in addition to their struggles. So that's kind of where I am at this point. I also do freelance writing for parenting magazines. But prior to now, as I mentioned, I was an educator for around 17, 18 years. I taught elementary school, ran a media center, and then I moved into middle school, where I ran the media center and also taught a television production class. And when I left teaching to have Barkley, I mean, sometimes things just happen for a reason, right? I mean, I had this child at the end of my career, after I'd already raised 3 kids, and I knew what to look for as far as developmental milestones and when those weren't being met. And I've been able to be home and connect him with the resources that he needs to be as successful as possible. And that is really my goal, is to help those families out there that are looking for resources, that are looking for help, to feel supported in this parenting journey, because it is very challenging.
It is. It really is. And it's so wonderful and helpful when people know what those milestones are, because, you know, we hear a lot about like ADHD, we hear a lot about autism spectrum disorder, but a lot of people think like head banging, hand flapping, not having eye contact, but there's so much more to it. But most people don't know what to look for. And I know when Benji's school brought up to us, they were concerned that he had autism. I was looking up like early signs of autism in children, and it took a lot of digging to find those smaller things that I should be looking for, I could be looking for, that could lead me down that road. And it's so much more than just those few things that I mentioned. So it's really great that you knew it, that you had that experience and you knew what to look for.
And with Barkley, it was literally one word that let me know we were not meeting a developmental milestone. And I will never forget this. And these are the things that I think, had I not had the prior knowledge of raising 3 kids and working with other kids, I might have missed. And it's key, the earlier we can get these children involved in intervention, the better the outcome. So I was standing in the kitchen and he was 18 months old and he was waving bye to his dad as my husband was leaving for work. And he said, "Bye, Dad." And I was so excited because this was the first time he combined two words. And so I was expecting this language boom that typically follows. And the next day, same scenario, Barkley standing at the baby gate, waving bye to Brent, and he goes, "Bye, D." And it was like he was frozen. And to me, this was a giant, deafening alarm in this spotlight on my child. And I had no idea what it meant, but I knew that was developmentally not appropriate, that he should have been progressing in language, not regressing. And so initially, you know, we were diagnosed with a speech delay. And I think that's the first thing that happens, you know, physicians and therapists are reluctant to give that diagnosis out really early. And so that was the path we started on. And then very soon after, we realized he had extreme impulsive behaviors and he was very hyperactive. And so he was diagnosed with ADHD. And then soon after that, we started noticing some of the behaviors of autism, such as repetitive behaviors and atypical behaviors, not playing with toys correctly. And so then we got the ASD diagnosis. All three of those prior to age three. That was kind of a rough year.
I would say so, but that's so wonderful because I feel like it's still getting missed a lot. And I've heard a lot of kids getting diagnosed anywhere between like 6 and 15. So to get it all done before, I mean, I've been going to some support groups and they're like, yeah, my kid's 15 and they were finally diagnosed. So it's wonderful that you were able to get all of that assessed and diagnosed before three, because those are really critical years.
They absolutely are. And I've worked with my state's early intervention program and they told me that most children are referred to them at the age that they're aging out of early intervention. So they'll get a referral of a child at say 2.5 or, you know, 2 3/4. And by the time they get all the assessments done, they've aged out of early intervention. And the BCB at my son's ABA center where he attends now said the average age of a child they have referred to their center is age 7.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, I feel like we're lucky that we were able to catch it early to get treatment started at a younger age.
Exactly. I totally agree.
So you mentioned that that was a rough year. And you told me when you and I first connected that you wrote your book, It Takes a Village, Get Your Hands Dirty and Build Yours from the Ground Up at your lowest point. So tell us what your life looked like for you at your lowest point, especially during that year.
Well, most of my life, I've been a pretty driven, very self-confident woman. I mean, I had my first child when I was a senior in high school, and that motivated me to go to college. And I took that as, you know, I had her and I wanted to be a role model for her. And I also wanted to have the opportunity to be present in her life as a parent. And I felt being an educator would allow me to do that. And it was a great career for me. And so coming from, you know, this being this self-confident woman and self-confident teacher and self-confident mother, each time I would get one of these diagnoses for my son, so first was childhood apraxia, then the ADHD, and then the autism. And between all of that happening, he was kicked out of the typically developing preschool he was attending. Each time I would get one of those bits of information, for me, it's like a punch to the gut, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of, it's a little of a punch to the gut. You don't expect it. You expect that your child is going to develop normally. And then when you find out they're not going to be reaching their milestones the same as their same age peers, it's tough. And so how I've typically addressed bad news in my life or news that I didn't expect is I will give myself 24 hours to experience those big emotions, whatever it is. And then after that 24 hours, I'm done and I get to work and I'm rolling up my sleeves, figuring out what I can do to overcome this obstacle. So I was looking at autism as an obstacle that we had to overcome. How can I fix my child? And I think a lot of parents early on, that is how they approach it.
Yeah.
And what I decided to do at that moment, once we got the call that the preschool could no longer, quote unquote, meet his needs, I found an intensive ABA summer program. So my goal, because I'm the fixer of all things, my goal was to put him in this program for the summer And in 6 weeks, we would magically have fixed every challenging behavior and issue he had. He would be able to walk right into a preschool the following year, and we would just continue on that path the rest of our lives.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was my plan.
Right.
Little did I know, that wasn't his plan. That wasn't my little guy's plan.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Toward the end of that summer, I was having a conversation with several of my friends, and we all had children the same age. And they were all talking about the preschool that they were looking into putting their child when the summer was over. And one mother was going to send her child to a Spanish immersion preschool. And one mother was going to send her child to a Montessori preschool. And one mother was looking at a science preschool. This sounds more like college to me, but these were, these were the preschools they were looking at.
Yeah. Wow.
And that hit me that, oh my gosh, my son isn't going to be going to preschool. He had improved in ABA therapy, but it had only been 6 weeks.
Right.
And that punch to the gut hit me harder than any of the others because I realized I couldn't fix this. This was bigger than me. This was the first time in my life as an adult that I felt I was up against something that I had no idea how to manage and what to do with. And what I did was pretty drastic right out of the gate. When I had that feeling, I felt like my friends were living at me, and they weren't, but it felt that way in the moment.
Yeah.
I ended those friendships. Now, it does have a happy ending. But in that moment, I ended those friendships because I just couldn't be around seeing what their kids could do that my son couldn't. It was putting me in a negative headspace. So I had to do what I had to do in that moment for me. And my husband was like, what? You love these people. These are your best friends. And you just ended the friendships. And seeing the shock from him, that shocked me even more that I did that. So I realized this is not emotionally healthy, and I need to be emotionally healthy to be the best parent to my son possible.
Right.
So I decided to seek therapy, and I wanted a therapist that was specifically familiar with working with families impacted by developmental disabilities such as ADHD or autism. That was very important to me, and it was hard to find someone like that, but I did find someone, and I remember the first... Oh, just a lot of internet searching.
Okay.
I called several different therapy and counseling businesses and asked. I called my insurance company. It wasn't easy. It took me about a week to find somebody.
And that's really not bad.
Yeah. And then it took a little while to get in. But once I did, I walked in her office and I said, I am not going to lay on your couch and cry about my childhood. That is not my problem. That is not why I'm here. This is why I'm here. And I need you to help me fix it. And she's like, well, okay. And the great thing was she had ADHD herself. So she had all of these experiences to draw on from her entire life. So she got it. And she and I, you know, had a great 6 months of therapy. And I will be going back to her at some point in the future because I just loved therapy. I mean, you're sitting there for an hour talking about whatever you want to someone whose whole goal in life is just to listen to you. It was awesome. But therapy was fantastic for me. And there were two big takeaways that I got from my 6 months with her. And number one, my first takeaway was I realized that it wasn't my son's diagnoses that I was having difficulty with because I was able to recover from all of that real quickly. That's my child. I love him unconditionally no matter what, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter what labels or what diagnosis our children have. Those are our babies. And there's nothing that's going to prevent us from unconditionally loving and doing everything we can to help them be their best people possible.
Yeah.
What I was having a problem with was I felt ill-equipped as a mother for the first time in my life. I was feeling bad about myself and judging myself. And so she helped me realize this is not anything I'm trying to fix. My son is not broken.
Right.
It's okay for me not to have all the answers. And that was very freeing for me. To be able to realize that I don't have to have all the answers like I felt I've had to have my entire life. I don't have to have this all mapped out because you cannot map this life out. There is no mapping out the life of the child with autism. It is day by day, and that is just how it is. So that was a great takeaway for me. And the second takeaway, and I think the most important takeaway that I got, was that you need a support system. I had a great one. And I cut it off. And so that was the second takeaway, was I needed a support system. And the good news is those friends of mine that I said, hey, I need to back off, I need a break, mm-hmm. they didn't go anywhere. Oh, the entire time they would send me, I know it makes me almost want to cry, they would send me loving messages, loving emails. We're not pressuring you, but we're here if you need us. And I think it helped them kind of understand too. Maybe they, not on purpose, but maybe could be a little more comforting to me about my situation and maybe how they present the things that their kids can do, because they also want to be inclusive, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and understand that everybody, all kids have different abilities.
Right.
And one of the things that one of my friends did for me is she sent me a book, and that book is called Far From the Tree. Are you familiar with that book?
No, I'm not.
It is a collection of stories from hundreds of families dealing with all sorts of different challenges.
Oh, wow.
And one of the challenges is families dealing with autism. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading a story about a woman who, she and her child lived alone. She had moved away from her husband for the time period that she had to get her child in a location in a big city where she had access to therapy, to ABA therapy. And when she would take her child to ABA therapy, the mother wouldn't go out into the community or do anything because she said it was too painful to see all the families doing things that she and her daughter couldn't do. And she'd go home and sleep. And then when she'd pick her daughter up in the evening, and then she'd bring her daughter home and she'd go to sleep, she'd stay up at night. And that's when she would live her life in silence and in isolation. And I thought, I can't do that. I don't want to. And I slowly started to isolate myself. And you know, it's very easy to slip into that.
Yeah.
Into that isolation. I knew no one that had children with autism. I didn't want my child to negatively impact anybody else. So I kind of kept him at home a lot. And I realized I'm not going to do this anymore. I need a support system. And so that's what I decided to do, was to build one for myself.
Yeah. So that leads us into your book, which, you know, there's the name, Takes a Village, Get Your Hands Dirty and Build Yours from the Ground Up. Is that how you came up with the idea for the book, when you realized that you needed to build that village or that support network?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I've always approached things in my life very systematically, very process oriented, step thinking. And so I created a step-by-step process. I wrote down all the areas that I felt in my life mm-hmm. I needed support, and figured out ways to make that happen. And I first wrote a simple blog about it. And this was after my therapy.
Okay.
And then the blog wasn't enough. So I did a podcast episode about it. And I'm like, there's more information I need to share. So I wrote the book. And I also have what comes along with the book is a 21-day Build Your Village challenge, where I walk people through the exact steps that I took to build my own support system. And I feel today so supported and so confident in this parenting journey. And part of that confidence is knowing that I don't have to know everything. That's
right.
The best part, because there are people out there that have the answers to the questions that you don't know.
Right.
And it's very freeing to know you don't have to know everything.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's funny that you mentioned that. At the time we're talking, this episode has not aired yet, but I interviewed a woman a few weeks ago about a child who, her child has diabetes, and they had to build their own village because there really wasn't anything in that area where other children had diabetes. And they built that village, and, you know, they were able to get questions answered that the doctors couldn't answer. They were, you know, they didn't have to do all this new research. They could just talk to other parents and find out what worked for them for these really specific but really important questions. So it shows how important a village is. So who should be in that village? What should the village be comprised of?
Well, this was what it was for me. And I think this can apply to most people. I'll kind of walk you through the chapters, because each chapter is about a different part of your village. So the first chapter is called My Village Includes Me. And you cannot look outward before you look inward. And we all know this, but sometimes as parents of special needs kids, we feel overwhelming guilt if we put our needs in the equation at all.
Absolutely.
But the issue is, if you don't put your needs into the equation, then you're not filling your tank, which means you can't be the best parent possible. And if you're not the best parent possible, then your child can't be the best version of themselves possible. So the first chapter is all about self-care.
It's funny that you mention, you know, refilling yourself. I don't know who I was talking to like a week or two ago, and they're like, you need to refill your cup. I'm like, okay, but the problem is my cup not only has evaporated, but a meteor has come and hit the earth, and my cup is now evaporated in the crater from the meteor. Right. That's where we are right now. Yeah. I need a new cup.
Yeah. Well, my chapter on self-care also kind of challenges people to maybe redefine what that looks like for them right now, because it's not going to be the same as before.
Right.
And that's important, because part of this journey is mindset and rethinking what self-care is for you right now at this moment in time. And I discuss several areas of self-care: your physical health, your emotional health, your intellectual health, your social health, your spiritual health, and how all of that contributes to you being a whole and happy person. And that each of those areas are important, and tips and how to work on those, but also ways to rethink your mindset so you don't feel like you don't have the time. Mm-hmm. Here's how you can make the time. Right. And you have to. It's just, that's the critical step, is first of all, thinking of yourself, and your village includes you. You're the foundation. And then the second area is your home. I mean, we still haven't looked outward yet. Any self-care or self-improvement expert or psychiatrist or therapist will say, if you're living in disorganization and chaos, your brain is going to feel disorganized and chaos.
Right.
So you got to get your physical space under control. And that doesn't mean your house needs to be spotless. But if there is stuff everywhere cluttered around your home, I can guarantee you there is stuff everywhere cluttered in your brain. And so that's the first two areas I focus on, is your self-care and getting your life organized. And then next, you reach out to your immediate family. That's the first time where we're reaching out to other people. And in this chapter also, I try to focus on rethinking your mindset, because sometimes we victimize ourselves unknowingly, but sometimes we victimize ourselves. My family lives far away. I have no help. My parents can't look after my child. I have no help. My sister is too busy. I have no help. And that is me. I have zero family members that can offer me any physical support. But my parents live locally. Mm-hmm. They're just not able to look after my child because of his big needs. And they also have some health issues.
Okay.
But I can pick up the phone any time of the day or night and call them and talk about whatever I want to, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they are there to listen.
That's wonderful.
And so they know that is the way they contribute to my support system. And they feel good about that. They no longer feel guilty that they can't come over and babysit.
Good.
Because I've said, you're not capable of doing that, but this is what you are capable of doing, and this is what I need from you.
Right.
So the chapter about family also challenges you to rethink your mindset about what that support from your family members may look like. Mm-hmm. And some people may have family members that can come over and give them a break, and that's great.
Right.
But, you know, not all of us do have that. And then the next area of your support system is your friends. And you need friends, and I'm sure you will agree, you need friends within the special needs community,
yes,
but you also need them outside the special needs community, because you can't live here all the time.
Right.
You just can't. Yeah. And one of my closest friends, she lives in my community and she's a fitness instructor. Actually, that's where I go take my fitness classes. It's very convenient for me. I could just walk down to her house. But when I'm with her, we hardly ever talk about autism. And
that's
it is such a welcome break for my brain.
Oh,
and then,
yeah.
And then when I'm chatting with my friends that have children with autism, that's all we talk about. So you really need both. And I give you steps and tips to take to create both of those groups and to really think what those groups both look like in your life right now. And then the next step in your village is your professional support system and your child's professional support system. And these are people that are experts in things that you aren't. So your child's ABA therapist, their teacher, your counselor, podcasters, people that write blogs, you know, anybody that knows, has information or has figured something out that you haven't. And going to those people with your questions and concerns is the first step when you have a problem. When I have an issue that comes up with my son, the first place I go is the BCB of his ABA center. And I say, hey, this is our new issue. What do you suggest? Right. And I tell people, I feel like autism is a game of whack-a-mole, right?
Oh my God, yeah.
Is that not a good analogy? I mean, you see a behavior emerge, maybe it's a non-compliance or an aggression, and you whack it with your metaphorical hammer, which is research and, you know, reinforcement, whatever it is. And as soon as you get that one under control, up pops the other. And yep. So that's just kind of how it is. And once you realize that is how it's going to be, it's easier too. Because I know the second I get one issue under control, I'm going to be challenged with something new very soon. So I'm prepared for that. But I go right to the experts. I do not pass go. Go right to the experts. They want to help you and they have the goods. So I challenge parents, when you have a behavior with your child and you don't know what to do, rather than beating your head against the wall along with your child, go ask somebody that you know probably has some suggestions for you. And so that's that section. And then the last area, which I believe is completely undertapped for most of us, mm-hmm. is nonprofit organizations. And those mm-hmm. are organizations right. that they exist solely to offer us support for free.
Right.
And we're not tapping into them. And I called, I think, around 10 national nonprofit organizations. And I would just say, hey, what do you offer the special needs community? And each organization has different initiatives. One may have an initiative, which is transitioning into adulthood. One may have an initiative of early intervention. One may have an initiative of water safety. But all of them exist to help your family and my family, and they want nothing in return. And then I list all their contact information. And then I also teach parents how to find nonprofit organizations at your local level. You just interviewed a lady, I think her name was Susan.
Yes.
And I loved that interview. And she started a nonprofit organization in her community mm-hmm. where yep. she wants to help families like her own at no cost to those families.
Yeah.
So I tell parents, pick up the phone and cold call these organizations and say, hey, this is my situation. How can you help me? And that's the thing. No one is going to come knocking on your door saying, hey, I have all this to offer you.
Right.
But if you go knocking on these doors asking for help, every single one of them are going to open that door and invite you inside. You just have to get out there and do the knocking.
Is there a particular resource or any particular nonprofit organizations that you recommend looking into if a person's a part of the autism community?
Well, there are quite a lot to, in my book, I list just a ton of them.
Okay.
And I mean, there's everything from, you know, Autism Speaks, National Autism Organization, Autism Society, Easter Seals, Special Needs Alliance, Easter Seals. I was blown away by some of the things they do, such as provide summer camps for kids with special needs.
Oh, wow.
And there's one right here in my own community. That's children cool. of all ages, of all abilities, can attend with people that are trained to work with kids like mine.
Wow.
So that chapter, I think, is really valuable.
Oh,
and
yeah.
once you look at all of these areas of your support system and think of it, it's not just my mom that can come over and babysit. It's my mom. It's my child's therapist. It's my local nonprofit organizations. It's mm-hmm. my international nonprofit organizations. It's just a whole host of people. It's myself and my own mental health.
Right.
And then you start to feel way less overwhelmed and way more supported and way less responsibility that this journey is all on you because Absolutely. You got a whole team there helping cheer you on.
And I wanted to go back to when you were mentioning the friends who are in the community and friends who are outside of the community. And it's so important to have friends outside of the community. And at first, I was a little frustrated by having friends who were outside the community because they didn't understand and they couldn't relate and they tended to avoid talking about the special needs aspects. But I found that I'm a very boring person and all I can do is talk about special needs and autism and doctors and BCBAs and it just never ends. And I have nothing to talk about. My husband and I go on date nights and we're like, I have nothing to talk about. There's work and the children. So it's so, it's so boring. And he's like, can you please stop talking about the kids for once? Like, we need another topic. So having friends that are not in the community where you can talk about like anything. Like, I have a friend who she and I text, me, myself, and my husband, we text about a TV show. And it's great because we can talk about something that it doesn't even have any kids in the TV show. So that can't come up. And we just enjoy ourselves. And there's something else outside of the special needs community that we can enjoy, which is really special because I kind of boxed myself in to that just one topic. So it's really important to have both support within that community and totally outside that community.
Well, and I totally agree. And you have to be purposeful about it. Because right. It is easy to slip into that habit of that's all that is on your brain. Right. And so we have to purposefully say, I'm going to table that topic for the moment. And I'm going to talk to my friend about the latest TV show that we're watching or whatever common hobby we share together. And for most people, they don't have to purposefully think about that. It's just organic. But for us, we do. And it's important for us to table that. I know when I'm with my, when I talk with my oldest daughter, that's 31, I can't make it always about the latest challenge or success with her little brother. I have to make it about her.
Right.
And also, when you were talking about your friends that don't have children with autism and that maybe sometimes they don't understand, it is important for us to, within reason and not over-educate, but to also educate,
right?
Because we are giving a service to the people that don't know what this journey is like, because they're going to continue to meet people like our kids throughout their lives. And we can help educate them and help them educate their children and how to interact with our kids and right. how to understand our kids. But yes, we do need to do it, you know, dial it back a bit when we're with those friends for sure.
Well, it's interesting because I work in the world of psychology. So fortunately or unfortunately, not really sure which, most of my friends are either therapists, psychologists, neuropsychologists. They're somewhere in that realm. So they have an understanding, but they don't really get it. One of my friends, and hopefully she's not listening to this, she works with children who have special needs, but she doesn't have a child with special needs. So she can really only get it from the perspective of a therapist, which is very, very different than the perspective of somebody living with a child with special needs and dealing with it 24/7, 365. So, you know, I've educated and I've talked about it and they have much schooling about it, but they still can't really get it, which has been challenging, because no matter what they're not really getting it in the way that I need it, which brings me to that other side of it is also important to have friends within that community who get it no matter what. You can say anything and they totally get it.
Totally get it. And I didn't have that. So I had to go out and purposefully with purpose and take action steps to make those friends. And I did. And those friends are invaluable. Now, those friends I can't personally get with as often because we all have kids with special needs. But, you know, you can join online Facebook groups. That's a great way to connect with other parents dealing with the same things that also don't have the availability to often get out as much as our friends without children on the autism spectrum. So I'm in a local autism group. So everyone lives within this area. And we do have some local events. And all of those typically include our children. So that's great. And I've made some real friends in that group. And I've introduced myself to parents of children in my son's ABA school and made a couple of really good friends that way. But again, you've got to go out and make it happen because everybody else is sitting around doing the same thing you are, which is wondering why I don't have a support system.
Right.
So I think just getting out and making it happen, taking the action steps to do it is just, it's so important. And once you do that, I swear your confidence rises and you see improvement in the areas of your life and your child's life that maybe were struggling.
That's very true. So you mentioned a lot of different layers of the village, which are very important. What are maybe two or three of the best ways to start building that village from really any of those layers?
I think making a list, writing down just a brain dump of every person that you consider someone that either is already or could be part of your support system, even if it's just like a mom that you can only call and talk to on the phone. But just make a list of all of those people and then begin to say, okay, how can I move this person from being a small part of my support system to a larger part of my support system? And maybe that means that you need to reach out to them and say, hey, I really could use a cup of coffee today and to talk to you about what's going on in my life. And, you know, or write down all of those areas that we talked about and look at those. In the book, I have a little journaling section after each chapter that I think is really good because it challenges the reader to analyze what their current support system looks like in that area.
Sure.
And then what they'd like it to look like. And then once you read the book, you can download the free 21-day Build Your Village Challenge where I walk you through the action steps to take. And sometimes people may need those action steps. Sometimes people
yes.
don't think as systematically as like my crazy brain. And yeah.
I think everyone needs those action steps, especially parents in the special needs community. Even if they do think in the way that you do, life is already so overwhelming and there are so many
right.
steps and the mental load is insane that having that step-by-step really helps a person to be like, okay, this is a bite-sized chunk of a thing that I can do. I can actually make progress on this.
And I don't have to think about it.
Right. I don't have to think about it. It will actually move me forward and it can help me work towards self-care in a way that is not going to make me have a nervous breakdown.
And that was my goal.
Yeah.
And it just, I'm a writer by kind of passion mm-hmm. and it kind of comes easy for me in a lot of areas. And this just, it flowed out of me. And I'll tell you one of the reasons why I felt I needed to write the book is that I was listening to an episode of a podcast and the host was saying, everybody has a book in them. There is a problem that you had that you came up with a solution that you could write a book about and then you could help others. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like that was to me, I needed to do this for the people like me
yeah.
that needed the help that I did.
Yeah.
And I will forever be grateful to listening to that episode of that podcast and being able to do this. And I just hope that it helps give people the hope of the possibility of building a support system, especially
sure.
if someone is listening to this right now and they feel isolated and they feel like they have nobody. I mean, right now, you and I are
right.
part of any person listening to this. We're part of their support system.
Exactly.
They can reach out to you. They can reach out to me.
Yeah.
We're kind of been on that journey, not for a long period of time, but
feels like forever.
Yeah. And I think about my early journey, some of the best support I got was reaching out to people that were already putting their self out there and their stories out there, other parents that had been through it, because that's where you get the real meat of what it means to be on this journey, the
right.
realness of it. Like you said, your friends that are in the psychology field that don't have kids with autism, they only know the clinical perspective of that.
Right.
The clinical side, not the human side.
Right. Right.
And you got to have both.
Yeah, exactly. It's so true. Earlier on when you were discussing your book, you were mentioning self-care. What are your favorite self-care tips that either that you talk about or that you use?
Well, my favorite one, and you're going to like this one because I heard on one of your episodes, it's one of your favorite and you don't get to do it as often as you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's take a bath.
Yeah.
Well, and let me tell you why that is for me. When I was pregnant with Barkley, I went through a hypnobirthing doula during most of my pregnancy. And she was in the delivery room with us and it was a great experience. During my pregnancy, she gave me a guided relaxation audio to listen to, and it was a water audio. And I would listen to that guided relaxation water audio every single day when my kids were at school, and I'd get in the bath and I'd listen to that. So I began to condition myself to be relaxed by water. And then I labored in the water and it helped me so much. And then
really
after
cool.
I went through that, I realized I had conditioned myself for water to be a stress reducer for me, to be a relaxer for me, to be my happy place. And I remember a couple Christmases ago, in front of all of our family, my son had one of the worst meltdowns of his life, right? You know, Christmas can be a challenging time for our kids because it completely disrupts their routine. And we've gained a lot of strength since then. He's matured. We've learned things in ABA. He's on a great medication regimen that's working. But a couple years ago, we were still figuring it all out. So he has this terrible meltdown. And I'm feeling judged by all my family, even though they weren't, still feeling that way. And I remember in the middle of Christmas, I look at my husband and I say, I'm going to take a bath. And I just disappeared. And, you know, I was gone for half an hour. But the second I even think about taking a bath, I automatically begin to de-stress and relax. And that it's not necessarily a bath for me. Just it's just water, whether that's being in my pool or the hot tub or anything.
Right.
And I think if you as a person can really dial in to something that is a anxiety reducer or stress reducer for yourself, whether that's a bath or whether that is a walk or whatever it is, and then use that when you're experiencing those levels of stress, it can be really life-changing. And my daily routine of self-care, I'm not the go get a pedicure type girl for self-care because sitting for an hour with nothing to do drives me crazy. That's like punishment to me. But my favorite everyday self-care routine, and I do this every single day, is before my son goes to bed, because after he goes to bed is, you know, quiet time. I want to do it before he goes to bed so my husband is looking after him and I don't lose the after bedtime. So 15 minutes before bedtime, I go in the bedroom, I shut the door, I lock it. I put on music or I put on a podcast or I put on a YouTube video and I do, I'm going to be 50 next year. So this is a, no, pardon me. I'm going to be 50 this year in 2020. So a skincare routine is very important, but it's also very therapeutic. So for 15 minutes, I wash my face. I do a face mask. I drag that out as long as I can.
That's amazing.
That is my daily self-care routine. So I'm actually getting the benefit of a skincare routine.
Yeah.
But it's more of, it's my time. That's the only time of the day that is just for me. And I think everybody needs, even if it's just 15 minutes, part of their day that is just about them. That, I think, my friends, is my favorite self-care tip.
I love that, especially since it's still during the kid time, which is so hard to do. And it goes back to one of the things you said way early on of we feel so guilty doing anything for ourselves because it takes away from our children. You know, doing something like that, you know, it's not hours, it's 15 minutes of an amazing way to take care of yourself in so much. I mean, that 15 minutes incorporates so many different aspects of self-care. That's really amazing. I absolutely love that.
Well, I think it's key. You don't wait till your child goes to bed.
Right.
You take that 15 minutes while they're still awake and you let dad enjoy their child.
Right.
Dad doesn't need a 15-minute skincare routine.
Right. Although dad's been taking some 15-minute skincare routines and using my stuff, but then I don't get a chance to use my stuff. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's awesome, though. Good for him for taking care of his skin.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about this in a minute. Well, later when we talk about self-care, but we're actually getting a pedicure together this weekend, which I'm super excited about. He's never had one. And I don't like manicures for the reason you don't like pedicures. I don't like sitting still with nothing to do.
Right.
But I can with a pedicure because I can use my phone, but with a manicure, I can't. And
that's
I go out
true.
Of my mind, so I can't do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So.
Now, if I have a friend with me, I don't mind it because then it's you're being social and you're doing self-care.
Right.
So if I have a friend with me, it's totally okay. I'm so excited you guys are going to get a pedicure together. Back before Barkley, when we did a lot more traveling, my husband and I would get pedicures together before we'd take a vacation.
It
was great fun.
That's awesome. Are there any other self-care tips that have really worked for you or been super effective?
Well, I think physical activity is very important.
Okay.
And that I touch a lot upon in the first chapter. And I don't mean spending an hour at the gym because I know you can't do it. I can't either. I am lucky that I have my good friend down the street who runs a fitness class, and she does it 2 days a week, and I only go one day. But I feel really good when I go the one day. But physical activity, rethink what that looks like. That releases endorphins in your brain, and we know what the neuroscience says about physical activity.
Right.
One of my favorite ways to increase my level of physical activity, I have a routine that I do when my son is in the shower. I take the time when my Keurig is brewing a cup of coffee, I do lunges around my kitchen. I don't take hours at the gym. I just try to build physical activity into my daily routines. And I talk about that in the book. So when my son's in the shower, that is his happy place. He would be there for hours. I do wall squats. I do push-ups. I do dips. And I have this little routine. I should probably write it up. Like, if you have a child that loves to shower forever, here's a little exercise routine you can do in your bathroom. And that's important. I do that every day. And then I feel like, okay, I didn't go out and run a mile. I didn't go to my fitness class, but I did do a few planks. I did do a few push-ups. I'm good. And it just, it does increase your self-esteem. It makes you feel better about yourself that you are doing something for you. Physically active movement helps create joy. It just really does. Yeah. When you live in a lifestyle of lethargy, that's going to impact your self-esteem. And we've got to have a good self-esteem for this big, giant parenting journey that we're on.
That's true.
It's super important. Be physically active in some way, even if it's just a few push-ups while your kid's in the tub.
Yeah. And depending on how old your child is, they might find it hilarious. Like if I do that around my kids, they think it's hilarious. And I may or may not get more exercise in if they pile on me. Not quite sure if I'd be able to do it or not, but it has potential.
Yeah.
But that's a great idea. That's a great tip. What about any self-care things that you've tried that really just didn't work for you?
Well, I'm not great in the social aspect of it.
Okay.
I have three other adult children that really demand, surprisingly, a lot of my time. And so, you know, my daughter, that's the lawyer, I get a phone call every day on the way to work. I get a phone call every day at lunch. I get a phone call every day on the way home. My son that's in college, every Tuesday and Thursday, I spend 2 hours with him going over his assignments and what he's got coming up for the next day. And that's by his choice. And I'm very glad he wants to sit with me and do that. And and then my other daughter, she loves to go thrift store shopping. So I try to spend time with her. So trying to spend one-on-one time with my other three kids and with my husband and with my child doesn't leave a lot of time left for me to spend time with other women outside my family. And I have a sister and a mom but I'd still try to do it. Like I said, I go to a fitness class down the street that my best friend runs, and there are other ladies there and we have a great time. So that's probably the biggest part of my self-care that I personally need to work on, is to be able to physically do things with other people outside my immediate family. Most of my social health is spent on social media and Facebook groups or texting with my friends. And you were talking about the same thing. You text with your friend a lot, but as far as getting together, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And I know I need to do more of that, but at the same time, I'm not going to feel guilty that I'm not, because there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
And there's also work, you know, so I write for magazines and so I've got deadlines to meet. And so, but I do, that is where, an area where I, even now, even through all of my self-discovery of building my support system, I still struggle. And that's important for people to know that even though you've gone through a journey and you've reached a destination, it doesn't mean that you're finished growing.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that. I find doing this podcast so interesting because every time I mention something, it immediately changes. It's just like when you feel like you've solved an issue with that's going on with your child, things are getting ready to change. Same thing there. So I know exactly which episode you were referencing. And one of the things I mentioned on that episode was that I get together with a specific friend like once a month, and I have not gotten together with him except for, so this was the friend that I actually did the first interview with on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I have, other than when we did that interview, I've not gotten together with him since, because life has been so crazy, either with the children or with the podcast or with work, that there has just literally not been time. And that had been really therapeutic to get together with him because he really understood what I was getting, where I was coming from and what I was going through. And that's something that I haven't had time for. So, you know, talking with you about it now makes me realize I really need to put more effort into trying to get together with some friends, because we'd started doing that. And I think in the last 3 or 4 months, we've just forgotten all about other people altogether.
It definitely happens.
Yeah. So thank you for mentioning that. I do appreciate that. It's always a good wake up call. And I'm like, oh yeah, we don't see other human beings outside of this household. Right.
And when you have 4 kids, oh my gosh, yeah, it's hard for much else.
Well, especially when they're all of, you know, it's a very wide age group. So they all have very different needs, I would imagine.
Exactly.
So you have to play to that as well. Mm-hmm. Well, Amy, is there anything else that you'd like to add on any of these topics that we've talked about so far?
Well, I think I would like to kind of close with the whole purpose of me starting my blog and my podcast was to help families get to a place where they could begin to focus on the strengths of their child and the strengths of them as a parent, in addition to all the struggles. And I think that is very, very important. And once you get to that level of peace and acceptance and understanding, that's when the joy like flows into your life in abundance. And if you're listening to this and you are in the middle of challenging behaviors and early diagnosis, I mean, listening to your podcast and hearing your joy talking about your kids in the middle of whatever, you know, horrific scene is unfolding at a restaurant, right, but there is still joy in the journey. And yeah, I think that's what is important for parents to grasp on. There's joy in this journey, despite where you are on it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Speaking of restaurant, we got together with Lewis's parents this past weekend, and then we went to a restaurant afterward, and it was both stressful and joyful. Alex didn't eat anything, which now we found out it was because of the ear infection and bronchitis and 9,000 other things that he has. And Benji, so we had gone to a reptile convention show type thing, and he decided that he was going to be a chameleon, and they had seated us in a booth. And so he was hanging sideways off of the booth, half on me, half just hanging in the air. It was quite impressive. He's quite the little acrobat gymnast for hanging off of the booth for a good 45 minutes, but didn't really help him to eat anything.
I totally get it.
But I was proud of him for having that imagination and the physical abilities to do that. But I was also a little bit embarrassed and frustrated that he wasn't eating. So it's interesting being able to have that joy and also that frustration all at the same time.
Well, I always say at the end of the day, I am absolutely exhausted, but it's an exhaustion of joy.
Right. Absolutely.
And now it's time for Fails, Nails, and Comical Tales.
I had originally planned to speak about some other things, but tonight was very interesting. So I'll start with my fail, which has to be one of the biggest ones that I've had so far. And I'm not even sure if it was my fault or not, but it is what it is. So I was getting the bath ready for the kids, and Alex was already in there, and I was calling Benji to come in to get undressed, but I'd been calling him. He hadn't come. So I decided I'm going to go to the bathroom. I decided to keep the door open just in case he came over. And we have a babysitter who is with us most nights just to help out with the complete chaos of the house, but she never comes down that hallway. So I'm like, okay, you know, my husband just passed by. He went the other way. He's with Benji. It's not going to be an issue. I'm just going to go to the bathroom. So as soon as I sat down to go to the bathroom, in walked the babysitter. So that was fun. Yeah, so she's now scarred for life. and you know, I thought I would be more embarrassed, but I just expect everything to fall apart, and whatever is the most embarrassing thing that could happen will happen. So I'm like, whatever, I'm just not going to mention it, and it is what it is.
We're living Murphy's Law.
Yes. I mean, we really are. It's just unbelievable. Like, it's
unpredictable.
Right. Going back to that Alexander story in the beginning, the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Like, that was just three things in one day. And it just kept going and going and going.
Well, and you probably could have written three more, or probably 10 more, if you'd have kept going about the same day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And going on a tangent, but is mostly relevant, you know, we're trying to find, so we're renting a house right now, and we need to be out of this house in the next 3 months, which is fine, except we need to find a house that's less expensive. We need to find a house that has enough room for the children to run around and not literally kill each other. And we also need to find one that's in a school system that will have decent special education. Apparently, all three things are mutually exclusive. And every time I feel like, okay, I found a place, either it's pretty much up on a hill like Mount Everest, or is falling apart, or actually is like has like a half bath and no other bath. Like, no matter what we do, things keep falling apart, or the number has been disconnected, or they can't see us, or oh no, somebody just took it, like snatched it up. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to make sure that my kids survive, and this is all falling apart. So I'm hoping we find a place to live, but
I can totally,
I don't know how. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So what was your fail?
When you were saying just keep your children alive, that kind of brings me to my fail. Oh, nice transition there.
Yeah.
But this was a while back, but between my son's diagnosis of ADHD and autism, and that was kind of a, I call that like my purgatory, because I really didn't know what I was doing. I really didn't know how to deal with my child. He wasn't in ABA therapy. We hadn't really gotten very far yet. Mm-hmm. And a friend invited us to a birthday party. Sounds innocent enough, right?
Right.
And so she said it was at a park. And I'm like, okay, great. It's at a park. My son, I literally counted 19 times one time at a park. He went up and down a slide. We can do this. If we are at a park and there is a playground and swings, he is going to be fine. He will be contained and entertained.
Right.
So the day of the party comes and I punch in the address in my GPS. It's like 50 minutes away. And oh, Jessica, wow. I'm sure you know, travel time counts, right? Travel time is very important because you can just add that to how long you can be somewhere.
Right.
So like, oh my gosh. So the minute I see it's 50 minutes away, I'm wanting to bail. And my husband's like, no, we committed. We're going to go. We're going to go. So I'm like, okay, we'll go. So we get there and the playground equipment I had envisioned that was going to be there for my son's entertainment didn't exist.
Oh,
it was a park.
No.
It was a park, but it was a gazebo sandwiched between an open body of water and a parking lot and no fences.
Again,
I told my husband, we got to go. We can't do this. He's like, no, we're here. We're here. We're going to try it the best we can. And he's the eternal optimist.
Just add a volcano, like an exploding volcano while you're at it.
I think I'm the eternal realist. So we get out and I'm already stressed. And this was, again, before I came to peace with a lot of things. So I got stressed really easy in situations that I felt wouldn't go well. And I put him in the stroller, gave him an iPad, hoped he'd stay there. And that lasted about 5 minutes. So
right.
I spent the next 45 minutes preventing him from drowning or standing in front of a moving vehicle. So that was my fail. And what that taught me was any time we're going to an unfamiliar situation where I'm not in control, I need to be an interrogator and ask about 8 million questions.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That, which just adds to the mental load that we already have.
Exactly.
Oh, that's an autistic mom's worst nightmare.
An open body of water in a parking lot.
Oh man. That's brutal. That's, oh goodness. And the funny thing is, like, nobody else would get that. Like,
of course.
Okay,
not.
So it's beautiful. What are you talking about?
There were 10 other kids sitting in the sand of a volleyball court building castles. My son's
right.
Same age. They weren't trying to jump into the water or jump in front of cars.
Right, exactly. Or if you're Benji hugging moving cars. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, God. So my nail also happened in that same bathroom around that same time tonight. Out of nowhere, Benji's like, I have to use the potty. And he is almost 4. He is still not potty trained. We've been working on that for the last 2.5 years, and we're still starting potty training. So we'll get there. However, he decided he had to go to the bathroom, and he ran over. And I'm assuming he's seeing that his friends are peeing standing up because he walked over and he tried really hard, except he's too short to do that without a step stool. And the step stool he likes to use, he towers over the toilet. So I said, wait, hold on one second. I brought over a little step stool. He stood on it. He got scared. He ran away. But a few minutes later, you know, I was very calm with him. I explained what to do and how to do it. And a few minutes later, he felt like he was ready. And he came up, he went to the bathroom, and he actually peed in the potty standing up. And yay! I'm so proud, because he's been wanting to do this for months. And he's just been too scared to do it, because he's the kind of perfectionist kid that if he can't do it perfectly, he's either going to have a meltdown or he's not even going to try. And for him to have that uncertainty and still try was huge. And he succeeded so hugely. It was amazing. And I am so proud of him. And it was awesome. So I thought that was a pretty cool nail.
That is a great nail.
How about you?
Well, mine is kind of similar. It took place in a bathroom, and it has to do with going to the bathroom.
Awesome.
So Barkley would stay in the shower for the rest of time if we'd let him. As I mentioned, that's when I do one of my workouts, is while he's right in the shower. And this was probably about 6 months ago. He's 4 and a half, and we're still struggling with the potty training too. So don't feel like you're alone in that.
Right.
So a couple of months ago, he was in the shower, and he had some toys in the shower with him. They were bath toys that were from the movie Cars. So he has McQueen and Mater. And I kind of reach into the shower him up without getting myself wet. And then I get out and let him just play for a while. So I'm sitting on the stool, and I can't see into the shower because it's fogged up. And all of a sudden I hear him say, "Mater, you're stuck in the mud." And prior to that, he had been scripting lines from the movie. Well, I knew that line wasn't in the movie.
Right.
I also knew there was no mud in the shower. So you get where I'm going here. So reluctantly, as if I'm about to peer in on a murder scene, I glance into the shower, and yes, Mater is stuck in something that resembles mud, but my friends, it didn't smell like mud.
Oh, no.
So, you know, I deal with what I got to deal with and get everything cleaned up. And that became a habit for a while. Every time we would put him in the shower, he would wait to go potty till he got into the shower. I didn't know what to do. And I had begun to use visual schedules for him. For every routine, he had a visual schedule for his evening routine, for his morning routine, for his brushing routine, teeth brushing routine. And he does really well with visual schedules. And so I thought, I'm going to make a visual schedule for his shower routine. And in the middle of the routine, it says, "No poop shower, poop potty." And I put a poop emoji and a picture of a potty. Jessica, the first night I used that visual schedule with him, he did not poop in the shower, and he has not pooped since.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, I don't use the visual schedule anymore. We faded that out. Every time he gets out of the shower, we'll open the shower door up, and he goes, "Look, no poop the shower." And aww, we give him all the positive reinforcement possible. I just can't say enough about visual schedules. And that was the key to getting him to not poop in the shower. So
that's
my nail.
Huge. That is huge. I mean, huge, like, ABA for you win. Like, that was brilliant on your part, and also much more sanitary.
Exactly. Oh gosh, it was a horrible couple of months.
He's proud of himself. Oh yeah. And he's proud of himself. That is a huge nail.
Yeah, it was huge.
That is awesome. My comical tale is also from that same bathroom, from the same episode. My children are apparently disgusting. They love drinking bath water. And I think at this point, not only do they enjoy it, but they enjoy watching me squirm when they drink it. And there is literally no way to get them to stop. They will find any way possible to dive into the water and just drink cups of it. It's disgusting, because I know they've both probably peed in it. So anyway, Benji was laying on his stomach in the bath. And he was, you know, like, you know, when you take scissors, when you're cutting wrapping paper, and it just kind of like glides through. Well, he was just like using his head and gliding through and just drinking off all the soap scum from the very top layer of the bath. And he was just enjoying it. And he was mmming his whole way through drinking the soap off. It was just so gross. But I was also just like, it was funny, because then we took him out and we put Alex in, and Alex did the same thing. I'm like, what in the world is it with you children? And disgusting. Like, they also love eating bubbles. So whenever the bubbles come, they either try to drink the bubble water. There's something with them and soap. They like it. But they also try to catch bubbles with their mouth because they like the taste. I don't know what nutrient deficiency they have that one keeps... Ugh, it's gross. But anyway, I know it sounds more like a gross tale than a comical tale. But it was just amusing to watch them both just sit there and enjoy drinking soap.
Well, at least you know your kids are well hydrated.
I enjoyed it better when earlier in the day, Benji took one of his regular cups and then he has a toy spray bottle that has the like the little straw type of thing that sucks up the water to spray it. He took that off of his spray bottle and decided that was his new straw and he was going to drink from there. I'm like, that's fine. It never had any chemicals in it. It was
right.
Solely a toy. It worked, but there was never anything in it other than water. So that I was fine with him drinking, even though that had been in the bath for weeks. But drinking the soap water is just disgusting.
Well, my little guy, like a lot of kids on the spectrum, is very literal. And I have two quick little stories of how literal he is. One, my girlfriend from down the street that I talked about, she came over around Halloween and she rings the doorbell. And when we open the door, when the doorbell rings, he always thinks whoever's on the other end is there to visit him. So he runs to the door. We open it up. It's my friend. And she says, "Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat." And of course, what does my son do? But he bends down to smell her feet.
Aww.
And she thought that was hilarious. And along the same lines of the literal thinking, my mother-in-law, my husband's entire family from Vancouver came for the holidays. It was great. It was absolute utter chaos with like 11 people in my house, but we loved every minute of it. But at one point, my son asked his grandma for something. And she said, "What's grandma's magic word?" And he said, "Magic." And she said, "No, what's grandma's magic word?" And he goes, "Magic." And she's like, "No, what do you say? What's the magic word?" And of course, he's magic. And I'm like trying to explain to her. He thinks that you literally mean the magic word is magic. You have to tell him. If you want him to say please, tell him to say please.
Aww.
But I do love that literal way of thinking. And there's no gray. It's either black or white. What you say is what you mean. And I just think that's just cute and hilarious.
It really is. It really, really is. Benji has taken to, if we mention like butt or poop or anything like that, he's like, "That's bathroom talk. You can only say it if you're in the bathroom."
I can totally see that. Yeah.
It is way too cute.
Now it's time for us to share a self-care hack of the week, where we share what helped us survive.
All right, moving on to self-care. So I alluded to this earlier, but Lewis and I are taking maybe this is our third or fourth date day since Benji was born, and he's almost four, so yikes. But we decided we weren't going to do anything crazy. We were just going to do like total self-care day. So we're starting off by getting pedicures, and then we're going to this hot pot place, and I don't know what hot pot is, but I keep passing this place, and I really want to try it, and it's going to be awesome. So we're doing that for lunch, and then we're getting mall massages after that. Like, there's a massage place in the mall, so we're going to go get massages, and then we're going out for crabs for dinner. Like, my parents for the holidays got us gift cards to the crab place and for pedicures. So we don't have to spend a lot of money because half of what we're planning on doing is paid for anyway. And it's going to be like the most indulgent, but not super duper expensive date day. And I'm super excited because we are both way beyond burnt out. Like, when I mentioned that meteor crater earlier, like, that's where we both are mentally. Like, our cup is just ash somewhere at the bottom of that crater. So we so very, very desperately need that date day. And I am really looking forward to getting maybe like an eighth of that cup back.
So, oh, that sounds like a great day.
I know. I know. And I thought he was going to think I was joking when I proposed that day. And he's like, "That sounds awesome." Like, all right, done, booked.
We're going to do awesome.
It. Yeah. Yeah. So how about you?
Well, pretty similar. When our family was here for the holidays, I think they could see how, you know, how demanding our daily life is. And so they gave us a very generous gift card to a local wine bar. And we have to hire one of my son's ABA therapists to babysit. So it's pretty expensive. Oh, okay. So yeah. They gave us a gift card that will provide us with all the wine and food we could possibly want. So then we can use what money we would spend on the meal and the wine to pay the sitter. So, or the ABA therapist. So we're going to go do that for Valentine's Day. So I'm really excited.
That is really cool.
So thanks to our families for looking out for us. Look at the support we have, Jessica.
Right?
It's awesome.
Right. I did not want like actual things for the holidays. We have so many things that I think for the holidays, I would like to give them all the things.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, give me an experience that will help make my life easier. That's what I want. So yes, absolutely. Nail to both of our families.
Yes, very much so.
So Amy, where can people find you?
They can find me at www.bigabilities.com. And they can also find my podcast on Apple, Spotify, or Google, but it is also on my website as well. And you can find my book at Amazon. Again, the book is called It Takes a Village, Get Your Hands Dirty and Build Yours from the Ground Up. And on my website, there is a contact me page. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or just want to know that, hey, you've got one more person in your support system. And I'd also like to point out that a very important part of my website is a section called Their Stories. And any parent is welcome to have their child featured in that section. And if you just click at the menu item itself, it brings you to a place where you have like a quiz or you fill out things about your child, and then you can email me pictures. And then underneath the menu is a drop down of all these kids that I featured. And it's all children with special needs, but we don't talk about their struggles there. Parents get a chance to use that part of the Big Abilities website to brag about all the things that make their child cool, what their interests are, their strengths. And I would absolutely love if after this is aired, my inbox is full and I spend like the next 6 weeks typing up things that how cool our kids are, because they're not worried about social norms. They're not worried about what other people think about them. They are dialed in to their passions and interest. And that sets me on fire to watch my child dial in to what is really interesting to him without worrying about the social norms of life. And I just think that is so innocent and so pure. And part of my mission is to want to share that with other people.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. And that is such a cool idea and such a great perspective to have. I absolutely love that because we only focus. No, that's not true. We tend to spend most of our time focusing on the things that need to be worked on. So that is such a cool way to spin things to show that our kids really are awesome people, really cool people.
Well, part of my slogan, if you will, I guess, is that it is my goal to help my child and other children like my child burst through the ceiling of their disabilities into the universe of their abilities.
Right. Very cool. Well, thank you, Amy, for coming on the show. It's been wonderful. It's been a blast.
This was great. I know. I loved it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. All right. That's our show for today. Join us next time.
Well, that's it for our show. To find out more, go to www.midstofchaospod.com. Check us out on Facebook with our group Thriving in the Midst of Chaos and on Twitter at Midst of Chaos Pod. If you like our show, please subscribe and help us out by giving us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you find our podcast. And leave us a review so other like-minded parents can find out what you like about us and discover their community in which to thrive. See you next time on Thriving in the Midst of Chaos.